Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you are going to get anywhere else. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can pretty much subscribe anywhere that carries a podcast. If you'd like to contact me, a couple different ways you can do that. Send the show an email. We'd love to hear from you. We do get a number of emails, you know, just here and there, and questions and comments, concerns. We even have people asking for advice, whatever. You can shoot us an email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. If you want to find me on Twitter, head over to @dailydosesports, and the same is for Facebook if you would like to spice up that Facebook feed a little bit. If you want to head over to the website, our website is Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Got new articles that come out every single week. We put the podcast up there. If you want to just link to the podcast right there, couple different ways that you can get a hold of me. Now, I have a little bit something different for you this week. I've got something pretty exciting actually this week. This week on the show, I am joined by a very, very special guest. You know, if you listen to the Daily Dose back in the day, if you listen back when it was on the radio, this is the man who hired me. He was a major contributor to that show. You know, he's worked at ESPN. He has written for numerous publications. He has worked and been involved in sports media and radio, both in Denver and nationally. We are happy to be joined by none other than Jason McBride. Big J, so glad to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Clint, glad to be with you, man, and I love what you've done. I mean, I knew you was going to be able to do it. Your talent is great, so I have loved following you and everything you've been doing.
Well, thank you. You know, I actually got started doing the Daily Dose radio show when Jason had me come down and appear as a guest on his weekly sports show, In the Red Zone with Big J. Jay, what on earth was it that made you think I should give this guy his own show and get him started?
I just think you really are great when it comes to sports knowledge, your delivery, just everything about it's just entertaining to listen to. You present sports in a way that I think that people want to hear, and you know, your stories are all relevant and they're all fun, and you have these great segments, and I think you just, you know, sports needs a guy like you to make it.
This is
with everything that's, you know, so cliche and how watered down ESPN and the other outlets have become, to have somebody genuine and giving you the facts and also entertaining you at the same time, I mean, you were a natural. So, I mean, it was just something that I felt like we needed to do.
Well, I appreciate that, and I feel it's probably a lapse in your better judgment, but that's all right. You know, the great thing about Big J is he has a big heart. He's always involved in the local community. He's always looking to help out kids. That was one of the things I know that drew me to working with him to begin with. Jay, what are you doing over at Wyatt Academy right now?
Wyatt Academy, actually, I teach an enrichment, a radio enrichment class. So we teach radio and the entire radio industry. We set up an online radio station for the kids over at Wyatt. They handle all of the content. So we have a sports page, we have news, we have community, and then we have also a group of students who have their own shows. So they play music, they talk about current events. I mean, it's just it's a combination of every radio station that you might listen to, from sports talk to KS175 to anything. I mean, we kind of try to hit every angle in the radio game, and it's really, really worked. The kids have really enjoyed it, and it's taken off. And you know, Wyatt is up for their charter, to renew their charter this year. And we're really helping them push to get that, because they're doing great things for the kids over there at Wyatt.
That's awesome. Hey, if you want to go check out that website, head over to WyattAcademyRadio.com. It is locally here in Denver, and the stuff that Big J does with those kids, really, really cool stuff. You've always been involved with those kids. You've always been involved with the community, and you stay real close with your community ties here in Denver. It's always good to see that. Hey, today on the show, Big J and I are going to take a look at the NFL at the halfway point. Do you realize we are halfway through our NFL season already? It's crazy to think about that already. Who are the top teams? What teams have maybe been a disappointment? Who are some of our picks maybe to get to the Super Bowl now that we have, you know, the first 8 weeks under our belt? Plus, we have to touch on the World Series, got to talk a little bit of college football. And as we do every week, we will bring you the Daily Dose Top 5, always a very popular segment on the podcast. You don't want to miss that. Hey, a couple things breaking news-wise that we do want to get to. You might have seen last night the first college football playoff came out. I'll be honest, I was a little bit surprised at the top four teams that came out. Here was the one thing that I think I take away from it. Don't get too high, don't get too low, no matter what team you're cheering for. But the first four teams, number one was Clemson. Number two was LSU. Number three, they had Ohio State. They had LSU at four, Notre Dame at five, and Baylor at six. Michigan State and TCU came in at seven and eight. Big J, when you looked at this first you know list that we've gotten, what was the thing that maybe stood out to you the most?
I think it, you know, we talked about a little bit pre-show was Clemson being number one. Like, I know they're undefeated and they've played well, but who have they played?
Right, they have one game. They have one game. They beat Notre Dame at home.
You're right. And do they play every game at home? Like, they're always at home. Every time I turn on Clemson, they're playing in Death Valley.
Well, they went to Louisville, and they went to Boston College in Miami, not exactly a hotbed on the road that they've gone to see.
No, I mean, Boston College is a shell of what they used to be.
Sure.
And so is Miami.
Oh, so bad.
So, to go on the road to those teams, really, that's like a scrimmage. I think Dabo Sweeney has done a great job turning that program around.
Sure.
I think if you want to put them in the top four right now, they're not number one. They're four.
I would agree. I would agree 100%.
If you want to put them there. I was a little surprised that Baylor didn't crack that top four, just on how right out they played. But with their quarterback going down and them having to turn to a true freshman, I think maybe the committee was like, well, you know, they won't be there at the end of the year, so let's not get that argument started from last year with the Baylor TCU argument. Alabama, people are saying, well, they have a loss and they shouldn't be there. Is there a team right now better than Alabama?
No, and there's no one that I would want to see.
Beat themselves early in the season, and they seem to turn it around. Nick Saban, I think he's only guilty of not being able to keep his kids up early in the season, because as the season rolls around, they're hard to beat, and they just have the athletes on offense and defense that I think it's going to be hard. They're going to be a tough out. Now, we'll find out about them this weekend when they play LSU. We'll also find out about Fournette and LSU, but I think those two teams, LSU, Alabama, have to be there. Ohio State has to be there. They're the defending champions, and no one's beat them, but they've been pushed this year by teams that I didn't think they even had a chance. Rutgers,
right.
You know, teams like that, really sending Ohio State into a frenzy and trying to, you know, scrap out victory. So it's going to be interesting, Clint. I don't really know who that last team, like, I don't know if Clemson deserves there to be number one. I know they don't deserve to be number one. I think number four, but who else are you going to put there?
I mean, yeah,
you
I don't
have
know.
Any Big 12 schools. Put there. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised the Pac-10 school isn't there. A Pac-12 school, I'm sorry.
No.
They kind of beat themselves up.
Right. The only one you could possibly put there would be Stanford, and I think we still need to see a little bit from them.
Well, that conversation is the same as Alabama. I mean, they have a loss early in the season to a USC team that everyone thought would be in the top four at this point in the season, too. So it's been a lot of parity in college football this year, and you have to love that. I mean, you have to love what you're seeing in terms of everyone has a chance. If you look at last year, Ohio State was 16 in the first poll. So
So I mean, you look down the list a little bit deeper, and you see some of these teams. You see someone like Florida State, who I believe came out at 16 this year. I know that they're looking at it and say, hey, we have so much football still to play. A lot of these things are going to take care of themselves. And the Big 12, you touched on the Big 12 a little bit with Baylor and TCU being so far down in the rankings, I think, from what a lot of people thought. But we also know that Big 12 is going to start playing some competition within their own conference, and that stuff, a lot of that stuff's going to sort itself out.
It will. You talk about Baylor and TCU, and like I said, TCU, their quarterback is tremendous.
I mean, love Trevon Boykin. He's fun to watch.
My favorite college player to watch right now.
Yep.
But are they going to get the quality opponent other than Baylor to kind of vault them up into the top four? Like I said, Baylor, we don't know what they're going to be. Their offense is dynamite. But with their quarterback going down and them turning into a true freshman, we don't know what they're going to be. So I'm looking for the top four teams at the end of the year, maybe to have one or two losses. One of those teams are going to have, you know, Alabama already has a loss.
Yep, I think we're going to have a two-loss team in this playoff. I think it's just going to happen.
We're going to see that for the first time. So we'll see. We'll definitely see. I think it's going to be really, really fun to watch going down the stretch. I think you brought up Stanford. I think you have to watch Christian McCaffrey and the guys there.
Speaking of kids that are fun to watch, Christian McCaffrey is electric every single time he touches the ball.
I didn't know he was going to be that good. I thought he was a talent, but I had no idea that it was going to translate to major Division I college football like it has. Because you're talking about a kid who's going to break records that have stood for total yards from scrimmage for a few years now. If he keeps up on that pace, it's just fun to watch him coming from Valor and being a Colorado boy, being Ed McCaffrey's son.
Sure.
It's fun to watch. So I want to see more of them. But honestly, you could have a 3-loss USC team run the table, win the Pac-12 championship, and end up in the top four.
It's just such a crazy season.
A different team now. Now that Sarkisian's gone, and then they've kind of dealt with what, and Pat Hayden stepping down. They're kind of catching themselves from the fall and kind of regrouping, and they're going to be a tough out because they were preseason number one. Let's not forget that.
Right. No, they're loaded. There's been no question about their talent. Hey, speaking,
they're supremely talented. So
yeah, they are. Speaking of college football, and I don't know how many people watched it. I know that I spoke to you just before the show, and you and I had both watched it. If you watched the 30 for 30 last night featuring Bill McCartney, it talked a little bit about the University of Colorado back in their heyday, back in the late 80s, early 90s, the Salinesi story when they went and played in the Orange Bowl back-to-back seasons. They ended up winning the second one. I don't know if you saw it. If you haven't seen it, I would encourage you to do so. And I won't lie to you, it's not all pretty. There's a lot of some really kind of bizarre and weird stories to that. But one thing that really stood out to me, Jay, and you know this because I know that you are a Colorado guy. Colorado had a ton of talent on those teams back then.
Oh, because people forget how good Colorado was for 20 years when McCartney took over. And you had draft choices, first-round draft choices from Christian Fourier, Chad Brown, Rashawn Salaam, Cordell Stewart, Eric Bieniemy went in the first round. That team was loaded. It was loaded for years, just built on what McCartney and Salinesi kind of started in the mid-'80s. And people don't really remember that because they've been down for a while now. But you remember how great those teams were. Winning the national championship, almost winning two in a row when they lose to Notre Dame.
Absolutely should have won two. You know one thing about McCartney, and I think McCartney was such a great recruiter. I think he was such a great motivator of kids. I think he was a horrible game day coach.
I disagree. I think McCartney's schemes were great. When they were Cordell Stewart and Rashawn Salaam, and their base set was a two tight end set, which I thought was brilliant. But they had the athletes at tight end in Fourier and at receiver in Michael Westbrook that could beat any corner. And then you had Rashawn Salaam, who rushed for 2,000 yards and won the Heisman. So to get in the two tight end set. And force teams to kind of put their jumbo packages out there, and then you just have the athletes to run by people. I thought that was brilliant,
and he was brilliant with his schemes. I thought on a game day basis, you look at like the Notre Dame game, and you started to get a feel for hey, you know what? George Hemingway is busting up the gut every single play and getting 8 yards, and he's back there having Hagen try to throw passes. Dude, what are you doing? Quit messing around. Hand him the ball.
If you remember, Clint. His explanation for that was, and it was kind of, it was kind of a brilliant. It wasn't brilliant, but it was smart on his part to say, "Look, we're in a bowl game, and yes, I do owe it to these guys to try to get a win. And Hemingway is having a great time, a great day, but we need to attract athletes to kind of push us into the future."
And that's how he ended up getting the Cordell Stewarts and the Michael Westbrooks.
Our style attack to more of a passing attack.
Yep.
Is going to attract those players. So it's just one half dozen of the other.
Right. No, I understand it. And that's how he did get those Westbrooks and those Fouriers and those Cordell Stewart kind of guys, was because he showed we don't have to just be a wishbone team. At the same time, you're going, dude, you run the wishbone and you just smash people with your fullback, you're going to win the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, what is bigger, winning the national championship or furthering that program? And he kind of tried to do both at the same time. So if he's guilty of anything, you got to commit to one or the other.
Very, very interesting show last night. And I, like I said, I would encourage you to watch it. Hey, let's jump in real quick. Major League, World Series, Big J, I suppose we have to talk a little bit of baseball here. Kansas City Royals came from behind in Game 5 on Sunday night to win their first title in 30 years. The Royals are a resilient bunch. There is something to be said for teams that just know how to win. And do you realize on Sunday night, the Royals were trailing 2-0 going into the ninth, came back to win. It was their seventh time winning in the postseason when trailing by multiple runs. The Royals set the all-time Major League Baseball record for runs scored in the seventh inning or later in a single postseason with 51. The previous record was 36 by the Angels back in 2002. This team put balls in play. They had a great bullpen when they needed it. I realize I'm not the huge baseball fan, but I can respect what the Royals did. A pretty amazing run that they went on here in this postseason.
You know what? And I expected the Royals to win. I mean, just based on their roster of young, talented players, what they did last year, almost getting the title last year, I figured that they would be hungry and come back this year. And they did everything that I expected them to do. The Mets are going to be, if they can keep Cespedes,
yeah,
then they have a shot next year. If not, if they lose him, then I think they're done. But I think the Royals, you know, just believing that they were good enough to do no matter what the circumstances were, how many runs they were down, you know, in the World Series, especially, you know, the big, you know, the Fall Classic, what everybody is watching, and to be down in every single game.
And they felt like they were a softball team just leaning on the fence going, hey, we know we got this. We'll figure it out. We'll pick it up.
They'll win. And I mean, this is the World Series, and I mean, I felt so bad for Matt Harvey,
who, sure,
in Game 5, really pitched his butt off, and really deserved to win that game. And then you give up a cheapie like that, and they tie it up, and all of a sudden you lose an extra innings. I really felt bad for him, especially coming off of his injury and innings, you know, count and everything that they had to go through to get him ready for the World Series. But you can't take anything away from those Royals.
No, and I'm kind of bothered by the people that are like, the Mets choked it away. I'm like, hey, the Royals went and took it, and they did it all throughout the postseason.
I look at it like you. They went and got it. The Mets were winning those games.
Yes.
And they didn't make any mistakes to lose the lead. The Royals just were good enough to go ahead and say, hey, this is ours. It's our time. And I think you might be looking at the next dynasty. I mean,
could be.
Both, that's a young,
you got some
young
nice
team.
Pieces.
I mean, that's a young team.
Yep. Yep. I do find it entertaining.
You might be looking at the next Yankees-ish kind of run where you're winning World Series back to back, and then taking a year off, and then winning another one. You know, I think they're good. They are scary good. Too bad, you know, it's not Colorado. It's not the Rockies.
Of course not.
But it's next door. So I guess I can take that.
Well, and I find it entertaining a little bit when I hear Royals fans talking about, you know, we got our first in 30 years, and Cubs fans are like, huh, 30 whole years, huh? Yeah, that must be pretty rough. Hey, one other story in Major League Baseball. The Washington Nationals yesterday hired Dusty Baker. And this is a guy who has some experience with troubled clubhouses. We know that the Nationals have some issues in their clubhouse. He's going to have to work out. Trust me, Baker knows how to deal with that. He dealt with, Jeff Kent and Barry Bonds for years. That's not going to be an issue. Plus, we get only the second minority manager into baseball, so I'm happy for Dusty Baker. I know that there was some talk of who they would go get. I'm happy they went and got Baker. I think that's a great hire. We're going to talk some more Major League Baseball next week. Might have to hand out some awards, Daily Dose style like we do. But let's jump over to college football. We talked a little bit earlier. This past weekend, interesting weekend, but I do want to get to one story that I want to talk to Big J about a little bit. Notre Dame had to come back and beat Temple. We saw that with a late touchdown. Florida trounced Georgia in the cocktail party 27-3. I don't know if Mark Richt ever is going to get any heat in Georgia. And then Minnesota, that was so painful. Minnesota against Michigan. My goodness.
If you're Mark Richt, like, who is your agent? Like,
he's got it made.
How many times has Mark Richt gotten the number one recruiting class in the nation since he's been there.
I know it. They're always at least top five, top ten, and they never do anything with it. You just wait for them. You just wait for them to implode because you know they're going to.
I don't understand how, and they put players in the pros. I mean, they have the same talent that Alabama has.
Yes.
Every year, if not better. And he keeps his job, and he mismanages that talent every single fall. And I don't know how he's kept his job that long.
It's amazing.
I really, really don't. I mean, he's been there, what, 10 years at least?
At least.
He's been there a while. And,
yeah.
and to be in the SEC under two coaches like Saban and Les Miles, who've won multiple national championships.
He can't even get to one. And I know that people down in Georgia, they look at it and say, well, he's a good guy, and he's a nice guy, and he's teaching. That's great. I get it. But this is a business at the end of the day. At some point, you do got to kind of, you know, come through, I don't know, with maybe a win here or there. That'd be kind of nice.
A big game. I mean, they fall apart in big games.
All the time.
I've never seen them compete in a big game the way they're supposed to.
No.
Every year, Alabama or LSU gets them when they're not supposed to. I mean, this team has talent at every position, and not just talent, NFL quality talent, like right now, at every position. And it's just, he's not, I think his big issue is quarterback. I think he's not a good talent evaluator when it comes to quarterback. You can get anybody down there at Georgia.
Yes, you can. And they do.
And I don't think he's bringing in the right quarterback for his system. I don't know what, I can't say that. I don't know what Mark Richt is doing. I just know I know what he's not doing, and that's winning big games against quality opponents, and I haven't seen him do that yet.
Right, and you can just count on him. It seems like if it is a big game, you pretty much already know how that's going to end. Minnesota choked away and what should have been a win against Michigan. That was absolutely painful to watch. And you could see, if you don't know the story, Minnesota head coach Jerry Kill had to resign for health issues. They brought in the interim head coach, and you could just see that the interim head coach, when it came time, it was crunch time, didn't know what to do, didn't know what to call, and they ended up, they get down at the 1 yard line with like 19 seconds left. They got one playoff. They were only down a field goal. They got one playoff, didn't even get the field goal up, and they ended up, the clock ran out, game over. You can see it's a little bit of a shift going from like defensive coordinator to the big dog. But the big news in college football that we have to get to was that Miami absolutely got away with one, beating Duke 30-27 on an 8 lateral kickoff return with no time remaining. That should have been called back for like 40 different infractions. There were 3 to 4 blatant blocks in the back. Running back Mark Walton clearly had his knee touched down before he lateraled at one point. There was a flag thrown by the ACC officials for an illegal block in the back. The refs reviewed the play and then determined there was no block in the back and the TD stood. There were so many problems with this. There's so many just issues when you look at this whole thing. In fact, it was so bad that the ACC, who is notable for horrible officiating, suspended this crew for 2 games for multiple errors. They missed a few blocks in the back, they said. They said that the Miami player, Rashawn Scott, ran out onto the field with no helmet to celebrate during the play, not after the play, during the play he ran out onto the field, which would have negated the touchdown. They made no explanation for the block in the back that they took off. I guess they said that the block was in front of the guy, but they made no explanation at the game, and then Walton was down. Jay, what should have happened here? This was an absolute disaster mess for the ACC.
I mean, I don't know if you could, forfeit games or give the game or give the game back. Sportsmanship should be, I mean, in those cases, and we just talked about, just to touch on what McCarty did in the 5th down game and how they said he should have gave that back because he was a Christian man. Same thing here. Like, it was clear that it was error all over that play.
Sure.
And I think at the end of the day, you have to put the right, you have to make the right decision. And there's no way that Miami should be awarded that victory. It's obvious. I mean, people who don't even really follow football can see the egregious.
Oh, it was so bad.
Things that are going on in that play. So, somebody's obviously a Miami fan. In the NCAA, the main office there. So
sure,
but you have to give that back.
The crazy thing is that this ACC crew hurts the ACC by costing Duke, because Duke had a chance for a bigger bowl, had, I suppose, some sort of outside chance at playing their way into kind of a New Year's type bowl game. This totally crushes them, and the ACC did it to themselves. It's so brutal, just painful.
And
to watch.
I don't know why you do that. I mean, Duke was a team, I know they beat Johnny Manziel 2 years ago.
Yeah, and they did in that bowl game. You know, David Cutcliffe has done a phenomenal job back there, because you don't win in Duke, you know, with football. You win in hoops, and that's it. But winning in football.
He's got athletes in there to come in and play. I mean, he's McCaffrey's other son. Receiver there. He's doing well. So, yeah, Cutcliffe, he's a smart guy. It's Peyton Manning's coach from college, so, I mean, he has the pedigree. And just saying that, then you have to kind of, things should really go his way. When you have that kind of resume and have done some of the things that he's done in the sport, he should get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to his team. And it was just common sense was just overlooked.
So crazy, and
it's going to be a shame, because, like you said, they're going to be playing in the Minor Key Car Care Bowl when they could easily playing in a New Year's Day Bowl. So,
absolutely,
it's bad for the kids. And I mean, that's what college football is supposed to be about, is the kids and doing things the right way.
Horrible. We're going to actually come back to some missed calls a little bit later in the show. But Jay, while I have you here, let's talk about some of the games that are coming up this week. Let's get a pick for some of the big games in college football. We've got just five or six games here. We're just going to run through, and we'll give you our picks for how we see these playing out. Number five, Notre Dame goes to Pitt. Does Pitt have anything for Notre Dame this week?
Normally I would be like, no, but I think Pitt can scare Notre Dame. I mean, they're coming off a scare at Temple.
Yep.
Who you don't think is should have been in the same game, but they competed right down to the end.
Sure.
Pitt is what is Pitt ranked? 20th? Or I know they're ranked.
Right.
It's a game on the road. Anything can happen. So I think this is going to be closer than a lot of people think.
I do too.
It's going to scare Notre Dame, although I do think Notre Dame has the horses to kind of, pull this one out, but I think they're gonna have to play.
I think Notre Dame wins it. I agree. I think Notre Dame wins it. I think Pitt gives them just a little bit of a scare, but Notre Dame just has too many people. One of the bigger games this week, number 16, Florida State at number one. I can't believe I'm saying that. Number one, Clemson. Why do I feel like it would just be so Clemson of them to just choke this away and get beat like 24-7?
Well, you know what? I just Florida State's going to come in there, and I think they're going to win that game. I really do. I mean, this is a team that was a national champion a couple years ago. So I think they still have recruited well. They still have the horses there. I'll go Florida State to upset them. I just don't think Clemson is that good.
I don't either.
They just kind of, I don't know how they got to be the number one team.
It's so bizarre.
It won't last long. I think Clemson goes down.
I think I do too. I think Florida State goes in there and takes care of business. Like you said, I like the job that Dabo has done there, and he can dance and stuff, but I just think it's going to be tough this week. And it's a little different when you start to have expectations. It kind of changes a little bit. Number eight, TCU goes to number 14, Oklahoma State. TCU is averaging 48 points a game, and Okie State is averaging 44 points a game. I have a feeling it's going to be, first one to 80, maybe, wins this thing.
It's going to be a lot like that Saints and Giants game from last weekend. If you're TCU, you have to win. You have to win out, and you have to win big to be able to be considered for that four slot. Because Baylor's not going to be there with that freshman quarterback, as I said. So I got TCU. I'll take TCU, and I'll take them in a big way, in a big, big way, because they have to win big. Unfortunately, that's just what it is. If they want to get to where they want to be in the playoffs, other than that, then they'll just be in another, December Bowl. So I think TCU has something to prove, and they have to send a message to, the committee, like, look, we're a good team. We are a good team, and don't count us out. So sure. I'll take TCU big.
Yep, Jay, I like TCU on that one as well. Hey, one of the stories that is coming out this week that I think is a little bit interesting, makes this game a little more interesting. Minnesota coming off that big loss to Michigan. They go to number three Ohio State, but Ohio State will be playing without JT Barrett this week, suspended for, you know, operating a vehicle while under the influence of alcohol. Do you give Minnesota any shot this week against Ohio State because of that?
What's funny is instead of saying this kid got a DUI, it's operating a vehicle under the influence.
Right, right.
You know, takes a little sting out of it, but I mean, the kid was driving drunk.
Yes.
But
underage.
Like I said earlier, hasn't played to my expectations. Even though they have, you know, a supremely talented team, maybe the best coach in Urban Meyer, but they've been pushed against teams that they should have blown out. I think Minnesota might be under, you know, a little hangover under, you know, in the Brown Jug game that they lost to Michigan in the way that they did.
Yeah, that's a tough one to lose.
You know, it's a tough way to lose. But, you know, Cardale Jones hasn't lived up to the expectations coming off of his game last year in the national championship game against Oklahoma and being the third string quarterback there. The one thing that is going to save Ohio State from losing against Minnesota this year, this Saturday is, I think Braxton Miller is the wild card there. Because if Cardale Jones doesn't, you know, move the team, Braxton Miller can still do it. And he's outstanding.
Such a talented player.
Have them able to rely on Braxton Miller pushes Ohio State over. But I think they're going to be scared. I think they're going to, you know, I think Minnesota's going to give them a scare.
Yeah, I think they could too. The big game on the docket this week, of course, is number two LSU going to number four Alabama. We've seen what Leonard Fournette can do. 193 yards per game, but he is going against an Alabama defense that is only allowing 78 yards a game. Hey, something's got to give here. Do you like Bama at home, or can LSU go in there and get one?
I like Bama at home. I really do. I think, you know, as far as Fournette's concerned, I mean, it's almost a certainty that he's going to get his. I think he's going to rush for well over 100. I'm looking at maybe 150, but it's not going to be enough. I think Bama's running attack is just as potent with the guys that they can run out there. They're two-headed monster, and I mean, is there a bigger back than what Alabama's running out right now in college football? I think he's going to prove. I think he's got something to prove to the country too. So I think Bama wins this game. I don't think it's easy. I think it comes down to a last second field goal, but I think Bama gets it done.
Well, and it's too bad because I think we pretty much agreed on every single pick there, Jay. I don't know if that's good, you know, good to listen to, but just how things worked out. Because I agree with you. I think that you know, LSU. It seems like every year, if they could just find a good quarterback, they could probably be winning championships right and left. Because you look, same thing. You look at the talent they put in the NFL. They are loaded every single year. It seems like they just cannot find a quarterback year in, year out to get the job done for them. So I like Bama at home as well. Let's jump over to you know, NFL, because like we talked about earlier, it's the NFL. It's the midseason. Every single year we see teams move up. We see teams that weren't in the playoffs the previous year jump in. We see teams take a step back. I want to talk first off, Jay, about some of the teams that have been disappointment so far this year. The first team I'll throw out there, and feel free to throw any teams out there that you would like to. First team I'm going to throw out there has to be the San Diego Chargers. They're 2-6. They're giving up 28 points a game. They're 0-4 on the road. And now we find out this week Keenan Allen is out with a lacerated kidney. He's done for the season. What has gone on in San Diego? I realize it's going to be LA's problem soon, but what has gone on in San Diego this year?
I think this was their window. They've been a team the past 2 years who have kind of been on the cusp of maybe doing something great and didn't have all the parts they needed, and they start to bring in people that, you know, they think can fit. I just think Philip Rivers' time in San Diego is over. I think the window is closed. They're really, really disappointing this year. I really thought they would push the Broncos for the division, but they've kind of been leapfrogged by Oakland.
By Oakland.
All teams, the Raiders, who haven't been a disappointment to me. It's a shame because I think Philip Rivers is a top 10 quarterback all time. I mean, I really have been a Philip Rivers fan, and it's kind of a shame to see where they're at right now. But I mean, you talk about them being a disappointment. You can talk about the Eagles.
Let's talk about the Eagles because that's another team on the list. Chip Kelly went and got all his people, and it's not working.
Well, you know, I think the Chip Kelly experiment is done in Philly. And I think it's not because Philly wants him gone. I think Chip Kelly is looking at going back to where he was happy, and that's college football. Now, there's talk of him maybe looking at USC, and I mean, that would be a great, great job for Chip Kelly. I mean, you know, you have that kind of talent pool down there with the kind of offense that you run. I'd be happy to see Chip Kelly. We talked about this team earlier. I'd be happy to see Chip Kelly in Boulder.
Well, sure.
I mean, can you imagine?
No, I can't imagine it.
Prominent. So, I'm hoping it doesn't work out for Chip Kelly and for more selfish reasons, because I want my college team to be better and back to, you know, national prominence. But they've been so disappointed, and for him to get rid of some really good NFL players, from DeSean Jackson to LeSean McCoy to Jeremy Maclin, I mean, I don't know how you get rid of that kind of talent and think that you're going to still be able to do what you're able to do. I think he's into a situation where he's trying to prove how good his system is, and anybody can win in his system, and that's not it. This is the NFL.
Right. We saw Steve Spurrier do that.
You have special talent. You need to hang on to that.
Yeah, you do. We saw Steve Spurrier kind of do the same thing where he said, hey, I can basically just do what I did in college and come to the NFL and do it. No, you can't. You've got to have players at this level because the other team, I promise you, the other team has players. Baltimore Ravens sitting at 2-6. And, you know, the Baltimore Ravens were another team that was kind of a dark horse maybe in the AFC. One of the big problems for them has been injuries. I mean, they lost Terrell Suggs. They now have lost, a few wide receivers. They don't have anybody to catch the football from Joe Flacco. But Baltimore Ravens, big disappointment this year.
Well, you talk about, you know, what happened, and they came in here week one in Denver as, you know, maybe a Super Bowl favorite.
Right.
Or a team everybody had to go to the Super Bowl. And when you lose a player like that week one in Terrell Suggs, your emotional defensive leader, he's taking up the slack for Ray Lewis. When you lose that type of player week one, it's going to be tough. And then you lose Steve Smith last week to an Achilles injury. He's gone for the season. Flacco has nobody to throw the ball to, even when Steve Smith was there. I mean, he's Steve Smith, but you don't have any left to go with Torrey Smith either. He's in San Francisco now, which is another disappointment that we need to get to.
Let's talk about your San Francisco team, because I know Big J is a San Francisco fan. He will ride with the Niners. San Francisco, I'm going to be honest, Jay. San Francisco is exactly kind of where I thought they'd be. I know they're disappointing to you, but what have you seen with that team?
Well, Colin Kaepernick. And me just being a 49ers fan, objectively, coming into the season, I thought the 49ers would be 10-6 because the players that left or retired really didn't play that much last year. And they finished with a top-10 defense. The 49ers' cornerbacks are atrocious. The secondary is atrocious. And the front seven is pretty good.
Navarro Bowman is incredible.
Quarterback.
Navarro Bowman is incredible.
I mean, he's the only bright spot. But you look at Colin Kaepernick, and he's lost the locker room now. All reports are he's been benched for Blaine Gabbert. I think his time in San Francisco is done. What happened to this guy? I mean, 2 years ago, he takes you to the Super Bowl. 2 years ago, you go to the NFC Championship game, and you lose in Seattle, which is, you know, nobody can fault you for that.
I was going to ask you. What has happened to this guy? Is it a coaching situation? Is it a confidence situation? Confidence is tough to get at that quarterback position because you're going to get beat up quite a bit. But have they not put him in good situations?
I think Harbaugh was starting to try to turn him into a traditional pocket passer.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a good quarterback coach here, there, now. So when you look at the situation, Harbaugh's gone. So you're left with a guy who he was trying to mold and now can't do anything because he's no longer there. Harbaugh's no longer there. Now you're just kind of sitting there with nothing. So he's got to start from square one. And that means, I think, another team. Look, you talk about, we just talked about Chip Kelly in Philly. You put a guy like Colin Kaepernick in that offense.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
look totally
you're
different.
Talking about something different. So if I'm San Francisco, I'm reaching out. Here, Philly, we take this guy. What can we get in return? And we can both improve our teams.
Well, and I look at a team like Seattle and the job that they do with Russell Wilson, and not that obviously Seattle would need Colin Kaepernick, but I look at a situation like that where they say, hey, we're going to use him and let him play to his strengths. If the right situation was out there for Kaepernick, you have to think there are smart enough guys out there that could use him and let him be effective, but that is not the case in San Francisco right now.
Well, I think the one thing that really has gotten in Colin Kaepernick's way is that $114 million contract. So you can't throw him into the same situation like you do with Russell Wilson, because you don't want Colin Kaepernick to get hurt because you're paying him all that
sure.
money. Now, Russell Wilson is a quarterback that, you know, you don't want your quarterback to take a hit, but he kind of avoids those hits.
Yes, he does, and he's very good at it.
And he's Colin Kaepernick 6'5", so it's a little bit different. And he runs more upright, and he puts himself more at risk.
I just feel like
a team that's also been disappointing. You have to look up in Northwest and Seattle also.
Oh yeah,
they've really been disappointing.
Yeah, they're sitting at 500, and they've got flaws. They beat Dallas this past week, but you look at that team and you say, wow, your offensive line is not very good. And what's surprising to me, Jay, is not so much their offense, but the fact that their defense isn't even looking as good as it used to. You see bickering between teammates. You see guys not taking care of their assignments. I'm shocked that the defense is not playing better.
Well, the Legion of Boom is no longer that, and I think you can attribute that to Cam Chancellor.
Right, that holdout really hurt them.
I don't think the holdout killed him. I don't think he's there next year. I think he's gone.
Yep.
I think, you know what, Clint, I think you might look at Pete Carroll going also. I mean, you've done everything that you can do for that team.
Sure. Well, and we've talked about it.
Taking them to the playoffs, it's a resurgence. But I think Russell Wilson getting the max deal that he got, or the money that he got, kind of put that team in that locker room in turmoil. Because you had Russell Wilson people, you had, you know, you need to pay other people instead of Russell Wilson.
Sure.
So I think that team is ready to implode right now also. Richard Sherman, where will he be? Does he want to stay? I know Cam Chancellor is going to be gone. Marshawn Lynch probably gone. So you got Jimmy Graham and you have Russell Wilson up there, and Lockett. Both Lockett, I think, are great players. One got the concussion, but I think he'll be back. But
well, and could we see? Could we see a
rebuild? And I don't know if Pete Carroll wants to stick around for a rebuild.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Could we see Pete Carroll possibly go back to the college game himself? USC needs a coach. I don't think he'd do that. But hey, could he go back to the college game?
I thought about Pete Carroll going back to USC, but if you remember when he exited, it was kind of in the midst of turmoil and violations with Reggie Bush, and he kind of turned his back on the university. Now, will they forgive him? Yes, because he brought them to where they wanted to be. I mean, that was the closest thing to a dynasty that you'll ever see in college football.
Sure.
Going back to USC, could he do the same things? Of course he could. I mean, instantly he can have that team as a national power again. So we'll see. You know, we will see. I think you have two of the most successful coaches in college history, Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly. Maybe, you know, we wanted to go back to that game. I mean, the precedent has already been set for that. I mean, Nick Saban did it.
Sure.
You know, like you said, Steve Spurrier did it. You know, the NFL used to be the end-all, be-all for coaches, and now it's not. I mean,
no,
Urban Meyer's never going to be a professional coach.
No, and he has a great gig at Ohio State. They can pay him as much as he wants. He can literally, you know, have a blank check while he's there, and he can do exactly what he wants to. Let's shift over just a little bit and talk about maybe a couple of the teams that we didn't expect to be maybe quite this good. The Cincinnati Bengals are 7-0, and they've got a ton of weapons on that team. Yes, we're waiting for them to choke in the playoffs, but Cincinnati's pretty good, aren't they?
Well, you know what? Are they? You know, the same time this year. If you look at last year, I would expect the Bengals to be 4-3, 5-2.
Right.
They're 7-0 right now.
Yeah.
And Marvin Lewis is the closest thing to a professional version of Mark Richt as you'll ever see. And
great comparison.
I think he gets talent. I think he's had talented teams and has never been able to get over that hump. And just saying that, I don't see them getting over the hump because Marvin Lewis, I really don't. I mean, it's just what they do. They'll have a, I mean, you remember when they were really good and they lost Carson Palmer, and then I think Pittsburgh beat him, went in there and beat him in the playoffs.
Sure.
Carson Palmer gets hurt like the first series. It hurts his knee. And that's his last season there. I think Cincinnati is great. I think they're going to be a tough out, but I don't think they're going to get to the Super Bowl.
Well, here's the thing that I always look at, and you think about this. I always kind of try to think of, you know, could I see this head coach and this quarterback raising the Lombardi Trophy? And you think like Brady and Belichick, or you think like Eli and Tom Coughlin, or Aaron Rodgers and McCarthy. Can you imagine a world in which Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis are holding up the Lombardi Trophy? That would be the most upside down universe we could possibly live in to see that ever happen.
Remember Bizarro on the Super Friends, and it was Bizarro Superman.
Yes, that's exactly what it would be.
It's a Bizarro world. No, that would never happen. I don't think. No. I can't ever see Andy Dalton, who just falls apart in the playoffs, and Marvin Lewis, who I said is Mark Richt in a professional level. I don't see them doing anything.
No, you're right. I think we have a better chance of seeing like the Chupacabra and Bigfoot raise the Lombardi Trophy than that. Got to talk a little bit about the local team. This Denver Bronco defense makes them a threat, at least, to win it all. Denver had what might have been the most impressive win of the NFL season when they beat the Packers on Sunday night, 29-10, held Aaron Rodgers to 76 yards passing. But one day after that, John Elway was not quite satisfied. He made a trade with your 49ers, sent a 6th and a 7th round pick to San Francisco for tight end Vernon Davis. We know that the tight end play has not been very good here in Denver. Big J, what are we getting from Vernon Davis?
Well, isn't this world funny, Clint? And we've all grown up watching sports and listening. And isn't it funny where you come to a point in sports where a guy is 31 years old and you're thinking what he has left in the tank?
Right. He's washed up.
This is a guy who still runs a 4.5 as a tight end. I mean, came in the league running a 4.38, so, I mean, you know, 10 years. But he's still one of your faster players out there.
Sure.
He was just so uninterested in playing. But 2 years ago, he has
a huge season.
They go to the NFC Championship game. They stopped going to Vernon Davis. And if you remember Vernon Davis, he made his name in the NFL as a blocking tight end.
Yep.
What do they need here? They need blockers, and they need the tight end production from the tight end position. They've gotten that now. Denver has put themselves on the same level as New England in terms of, you know, for favorites to win the AFC. I mean,
sure.
they signing Vernon Davis has kind of leveled the playing field because Julian, you talk about Peyton Manning and this offense and everything else, but the loss of Julius Thomas has really affected them and has really been apparent this season.
Yeah, it has.
Like Vernon Davis, who I think is even better than Julius Thomas, is really, really going to give this offense a shot in the arm. They started to run the ball last week with that team. Now you go in a better blocker and blocking tight end, a better pass-catching tight end, a faster tight end, another weapon that in the middle of the field that they need. You can't double Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders now, or you can't double both of them now.
Right.
You have to for Vernon Davis.
And Davis has enough speed. He can stretch the field. I mean, he can go downfield and hurt you, too.
Yeah, he can get downfield. He was totally misused as a 49er, and I think he has a chip on his shoulder because people have kind of counted him out. But like I said, Clint, this is a 31-year-old kid still. I can't even fathom. Like, they're talking about these players who are in their early 30s. I mean, they do it to DeMarcus Ware, too.
Right. Well, and it's so funny that you said that, because when we got Vernon Davis, my thought seriously was, what is he, 36, 37? That's how they make him out to be. He's not. He's 31. He's still in his prime.
Exactly. I mean, athletically, he is in his prime still. And you're talking about this kid like he's, you know, Riley Oldham or something.
Right.
He's been around forever. And, I mean, this is a young guy. A kid is 31 years old. I mean, you're still in your athletic prime.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. Hey, I want to get a couple of picks from you. Are you ready to hand out a couple of picks here? Here are a couple of picks that I want from you. We're sitting at midseason. We have a pretty good idea of the direction that some of these things are going. If you had to pick an MVP of the league, who would you have right now?
Oh, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. But if and I'm going to be honest with you, I've never been a Cam Newton fan. But if
he's
you
doing
look
things.
At what he's been able to do and them being undefeated, and he has no one to throw to. No one.
Right.
Greg Olsen is a good tight end, but I think he's a little bit past his prime. Ted Ginn is your number one receiver, and you've seen what he was able to do dropping a touchdown pass the other
Why
night.
Does he and always wear
all season long?
Right, he's always wearing oven mitts instead of wide receiver gloves, which is weird to me.
Right, I mean those things are super sticky.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I think you have to look at Cam Newton. Will he be voted, you know, MVP? No, I think.
Yeah, it probably goes to Brady, but I see what you're saying too, because Newton has had a great season.
And I think people were going to look to him for the kind of season he's having, but Cam Newton's played great football for a young quarterback in his league, and he's living up to, you know, being the number one pick. I mean, he really, really is. Will he win the award? No, because like I said, like you said, Tom Brady is, you know, just on another level right now. So
if you had to go
those two right there.
Sure. If you had to go offensive rookie of the year, Todd Gurley with the Rams, Amari Cooper with the Raiders, even someone like Stephon Diggs with the Vikings, who would your vote be for offensive rookie of the year right now?
You know, Amari Cooper is a stud.
Yeah,
he's everything that Julio Jones or A.J. Green or any of these big-name receivers, Calvin Johnson, he's everything that these guys are. But unfortunately, what Todd Gurley has done in four games...
Oh, it's amazing.
...has just been, you know, I mean, and the running back position has been so devalued the last few years. Well, you don't really need a running back. This is a pass. I mean, he has made some of the most spectacular runs in four weeks against four different teams, against pretty good defenses.
Pretty good defenses, yeah.
So I look at Todd Gurley.
I would, too.
A clear front runner. But how? Don't get me wrong. Amari Cooper is a stud.
Yeah.
And he was going to really have a great career in the NFL.
Has
and
a bright future.
I think he's going to have a big game against the Broncos. I think he's going to really have a big game coming in here to Mile High when they come back. I think he's going to have a big game. And I think the Raiders are going to push them in that game. That might be a loss for the Broncos and the home team here. But I think that's all because of Amari Cooper.
Well, and they pushed him in that first game, so I definitely could see that. You know, Todd Gurley reminds me just a little, and I hate throwing out comparisons. He reminds me just a little bit of Eric Dickerson. The way he runs so big and strong. Todd Gurley just reminds me just a hair of Eric Dickerson.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I can see, I mean, him running straight, you know, straight up and down, you know, kind of like Eric Dickerson did, and just the blazing breakaway speed.
So fast, but to be the size that he is.
Uniform, it looked like Red Dickerson running the touchdown against my 49ers last week.
Right. To be as big as he is, it doesn't make any sense that he's that fast. If you had to pick a comeback player of the year, you've got a few choices. I mean, Carson Palmer, Chris Johnson, Eric Berry, obviously with the health issue that he had, Adrian Peterson even. Comeback player of the year, who would you be picking?
You almost have to go with Carson Palmer. I mean, you almost have to. Everything that he's been through, and he was down with an injury. You know, Adrian Peterson, his comeback was because he was held out because of, you know, something off field. But, I mean, this is a physical specimen. I mean, he's been that way since he was coming out of high school. I mean, it was one of the guys I think could have played coming out of high school was Adrian Peterson.
Sure.
He's had a pretty good season also. But that team, I think, you know, with Adrian Peterson, without – Bridgewater. I think he's played great and has them at 5-2. And I think without Bridgewater, they're not there. I think without Adrian Peterson, they're still pretty good.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are not where they're at without Carson Palmer.
No, they're not.
Not close. Not even close. And just, you know, he just still knows how to play quarterback. He still knows how to read defenses. He still knows how to get the ball where it needs to be. And he still has Larry Fitzgerald. And people don't even, you know, people just sleep on him, but they have a relationship, and they're great. So I'll go Carson Palmer easily.
Okay.
That's
And I can understand. I think I might throw a vote towards Chris Johnson, and I'm going to tell you why. Only because for like the first 3 weeks, I had no idea dude was even in the league still. So I'm gonna throw a little bit towards him. Only because remember he got like shot or something. And I mean,
he
dude,
got shot last season. He got shot last
yes,
season, and I think the bullet is still lodged.
It's
in
like
his,
it's like in his abdomen or something. Yeah, it's yeah. Just bizarre. Okay, if you had to have a Super Bowl,
but you know what, without Carson Palmer. Taking a little pressure off and having defenses, you know, not being able to stack the line.
You're exactly right.
I think that helps Chris Johnson.
I would agree with you 100% because he has made Chris Johnson be a little bit better this year. If you had to pick a Super Bowl right now, we're going into week 9, midway point through the season. Give me your Super Bowl pick right now.
Man, that's a tough one, Clint. That is a tough one. Because the NFC is wide open, I think. I think it's tough. I mean, in the AFC, you have you have the Broncos. I mean, you're the usual suspects. You have your Denver Broncos. You have the Patriots on one level, and then everybody else, be it the Bengals,
right.
on another level below them. But when you look at the NFC, you have Carolina. You have an Atlanta team who they can't seem to figure out who they are. But I think if they get it together, they'll be able to make some noise. Green Bay, you're going to still hear from Green Bay, even though
they're not
here and got dominated. You're still going to hear from Green Bay. So if I had to go with anybody, I would go. I think the addition of Vernon Davis put the Broncos over the top. I really, really do. They're going to be.
You're going Broncos.
They're going to be hard to beat with them. That defense, people are talking about how great that defense is. If you look at the Denver Broncos defense numbers this year, they're better than Seattle's defense that won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. And that defense was scary, scary good. And
yep.
This one is outperforming them through 8 games of the season, or 7 games of the season so far. So I would go Denver.
Tough choice on that other side.
Denver, Carolina.
Okay. I can see that. And Carolina. They just find ways to get it done. It's not pretty, but Cam Newton finds ways to get it done, and it seems like they're always in a 3rd and short, and he always seems to find a way to convert it.
Right, and then their defense is pretty good with Kuechly. Their secondary is underrated. So I'll go Carolina.
Okay. I like it. Preseason, I picked Broncos versus Packers. I'm just a prideful idiot, so I'm going to stick with that, but only out of my own, self-serving nature. Hey, a couple games this week that I do want to talk about real quick. Green Bay goes to Carolina. Green Bay coming off that tough loss to the Broncos. Carolina, obviously, a big win in overtime. Who do you got in Green Bay versus Carolina this week?
Well, you look at Aaron Rodgers, and you look what the defense here was able to do to him. Who is his number one receiver? I mean, I think that's a problem. I mean, Jordy Nelson is not there.
No.
And I think it's really, been hard on Aaron Rodgers to find that guy to go to. I mean, you bring back James Jones, but, I mean, come on.
Well, and Jones and Cobb aren't healthy, I don't think, either.
No. But I like Ty Montgomery. I do like him, but I think he's too young. He hasn't figured it out yet. I'll say Carolina. I mean, Carolina is playing on a different level right now. And like I said, Cam Newton is playing MVP-style quarterback.
Sure.
And I'll take Carolina now.
Yeah, I'll take Carolina. I think Green Bay bounces back and makes it tough on them, but I like Carolina at home. Miami and Buffalo, it might sound like it's weird that would be even a game that you'd even watch, but this is kind of the battle for can anyone stay with the Patriots and the Jets. Both these teams are 3-4. Both of them, I think, have underachieved from what they thought they were going to be. Miami at Buffalo, got a pick on this ugly game.
Well, that was one of the teams that I was going to talk about as one of my disappointments was definitely Miami.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I went and picked up Ndamukong and Sue, having the defense that they had. They would be, on top of the NFC East right now. I think Tannehill, you pay him all that money, he still hasn't proved anything to me. But I think they're a little bit more together than Buffalo. I think they're still in disarray with the quarterback situation. And, you know, they don't have anybody to throw the ball to. Sammy Watkins is hurt all the time. Percy Harvin is always, you know, down with.
He may be done. Jay, he may retire.
I'll take the Dolphins in this one.
Gonna go Dolphins. All right, I'm gonna go Buffalo only because it's the home team, and I don't think that'll actually happen. But I'm gonna go with Buffalo. Hey, we have a pretty bizarre matchup. You wouldn't think of this. We have Todd Gurley versus Adrian Peterson. Rams versus Vikings. The game is in Minnesota. Rams are really good in the NFC West. They're not always great outside their own division. Who do you like, Rams at Vikings this week?
I like Teddy Bridgewater and Adrian Peterson. I think he's played, he's learning how to play quarterback in the league. I mean, he came in here and scared the Broncos and that good defense, and they were in the game until the end.
Yes, they were.
I think he's really, really took strides this year. I'll take the Vikings.
Yeah.
Gurley, like you said, they wouldn't play the NFC West teams well. So I take the Vikings easy.
Okay. I like the Vikings there too, and I'm a big Bridgewater guy. I think he's smart. I think he's savvy, and I think he doesn't get rattled. He doesn't get flustered, which I want in this kind of game. One game, a little bit interesting. Oakland Raiders go to Pittsburgh. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about how much improved the Raiders have looked this year under Derek Carr, Amari Cooper. They've got a little bit of a running game. They've got a little bit of a defense. I think it's a little different when we start to expect the Raiders. Okay, now you got expectations. It changes a little bit. Can they go to Pittsburgh? They've got Roethlisberger back. They lost Le'Veon Bell. Steelers are limping. They're 4-4, but the Steelers can't afford to lose much more. They've got to try to find a way to get a win at home. Raiders at Steelers, who do you like?
Well, that's a tough one because, like you said, the Raiders can't lose anymore. I mean, not the Raiders, but the Steelers can't lose again.
Right.
With them being 4-4 and Big Ben, I think, came back a week too early, but he is back. So losing Le'Veon Bell is, you know, maybe for the season is a huge thing. But you do have D'Angelo Williams, who is a serviceable back. He still has some go-get in, you know, as far as speed.
Sure.
He's still shifty. He still makes good moves. Heinz Field is always a tough place to play. But I think these are your new Oakland Raiders. I think they have turned the corner, and you know, in the next few seasons they're going to be a challenge for the Broncos. So I have the Raiders.
Okay,
go in there and get the upset.
Well, I like it. I'm going to take the Steelers. I'm going to take Big Ben at home. Probably going to regret that pick, but I'm going to take Big Ben at home, and I want to see. I still want to see the Raiders. You know, go on the road, beat a big-time team. I don't know if Pittsburgh is that big-time team, but it's about all we have right now. Last game.
You need a big-time win.
Yeah, they do.
Del Rio, I think he's right there with what he wants. You know, with Derek Carr, with Cooper, with a above-average running game.
Yeah.
And the defense isn't playing that bad either.
No.
I got to go with the Raiders in that one.
Okay.
I'll go with the Raiders.
I like it. Last one we'll do, and I don't know, when I look at on paper at this game, I don't know that this should be a close game, but I have a feeling that it could be. Denver goes to Indianapolis. Peyton goes back to Indy. When I look at this game and we hear the stories about Andrew Luck and what his problem is, he looks good at times, he looks horrible at times. Could the Broncos go back in there and get some revenge on the Colts for that playoff loss a year ago? What do you see happening in Indianapolis this week when the Broncos go to town?
Well, I think, you know, especially they fired Pep Hamilton, your offensive coordinator, so, you know, you have a new system that you're going to be running, or you won't have him calling the plays. I think that was a definite mistake, letting him go. Peyton owes them one for them beating him, I think, last year, the year before, when he goes into Indianapolis. I think what you're going to see is the Vernon Davis show. And we talked about that. I think you're going to see the Vernon Davis show in Indianapolis. He's going to really show how good of a pickup he was. I got the Broncos to take it.
You know, it's funny because we started to hear a little bit this week that, you know, there's a rib injury. Andrew Luck has a problem with the ribs and that he could be playing with broken ribs. Jay, I got to call BS on this. There ain't no way he's playing with broken ribs. We're talking about he might die if he gets hit. And if anyone's going to hit him, trust me, it's going to be this week with this Denver pass rush. I don't think I'm buying he has broken ribs.
I have taken from someone who has broken their ribs before to have multiple broken ribs and put yourself, I don't care how many cortisone shots that you get, there's no way that he has multiple broken ribs.
No.
playing quarterback, getting hit like that every game. There's no way he's able to stand up.
No, I think that's garbage. You'd be running the risk of like a punctured lung and stuff.
They don't want to see Matt Hasselbeck because I think veteran quarterbacks can read defenses, and it would be a little bit tougher game if Hasselbeck was in there. But like I said, Vernon Davis is going to have a great game.
Yeah.
This is going to be his breakout game, saying, hey, I can still play with a quarterback who throws me the ball. And it's just going to be that added weapon that Julius Thomas effect that Peyton had last year. So I got them to win easy in Indy. I mean, really easy. I think they're going to start putting up numbers in terms of, you know, yards like they did against Green Bay, and I think they're going to start scoring points.
Sure.
I think the running game is going to start working. I think Denver is really, right now, bringing Vernon Davis in when you did, and having New England at the end of the month, he's going to be able to get acclimated to the offense. He's going to be able to get used to working with Peyton and know where Peyton wants him on certain routes and when to do and how to read. I think by the time that the Broncos get to November 29th, they're going to be offensively almost as good as they were last year.
Going to be fun to watch. We're just at the midseason point. We're just at the halfway point, and it's going to be fun to see how this all turns out because we've seen how much it has changed already just in the first 8 weeks. It's going to be fun to see how it shapes up as we go down the stretch. Jay, I have to thank you so much for joining us here, talking a little bit of NFL, talking some baseball, talking some college football. It has been a lot of fun to have you back on. I appreciate you coming in and joining the Daily Dose podcast. I appreciate it so much. Always good to hear from you. Please don't be a stranger. If you ever want to come back on the show, you know you are more than welcome. Someone that, like I said before in the show, gave me my start, got me going, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Daily Dose.
Anytime, man. This is a great show. I always check you out, man. Keep doing your thing, and I would love to join you again.
Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which way the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go, and this week is no exception. With the Miami Duke fiasco that we had this past week, I started thinking about, some other missed calls. You know, there's something called, I did a little bit of basketball coaching back in the day. I actually just as a young kid, like a teenager, did some officiating even. And there's something that they talk about when you're officiating called omission bias, where not calling something sometimes is viewed as maybe a little bit less harmful than making the call. So, a player is driving to the basket with 4 seconds left, you're less likely to get a foul called. It's kind of one of those things. If you were to do that in the first quarter, yes, of course they're going to call it. But in the fourth quarter, with the game on the line, we see this in Major League Baseball. We see it in the NBA, NFL, NHL, college football, European soccer. It doesn't matter. We see omission bias. You can't make that call at that point in the game. We see this all the time in sports. And with Miami and Duke, I really think that's what happened. I think the officials in that game started to look at this and go, well, we can't make a call. We can't throw a flag. It's going to affect it. We're going to let the players dictate what happens. You know, there's been a lot of times we've had non-calls in sports. Should they have been called? Probably. Maybe they were missed. Maybe the official genuinely didn't see them. Or maybe we had a little bit of omission bias where the officials said, hey, I don't want to call it. I don't want to dictate the outcome of this game. Let's count down the top 5 non-calls in sports history. Number 5 on our list. We had the 1986 World Cup. I know, it's soccer. It's soccer. But still, Argentina versus England, Maradona's hand of God. This game was a quarterfinal between Argentina and England. In the second half, a ball is kicked into the goal area toward England. Their goalie, Peter Shilton, is going out to get it. Maradona is running in to try to hit it. Well, Maradona's like a little guy. I mean, he's like 5'8". Shilton was like 6'1". So he's going to get it pretty easily. Except for that Maradona jumps up and then just bats it with his hand. Now, everyone sees it. Everyone's like, well, that's going to get called. But the referee didn't call it. He batted it in with his hand. We all saw it. Everyone knew what had happened. Referee didn't call it. Did he not see it? Was it omission bias? I don't know what it was. But Argentina won 2-1 and went on to beat West Germany in the finals of the 86 World Cup. Maradona, after the game, said the goal was scored a little with the head of Maradona and a little with the hand of God. Well, yeah, and also the hand of Maradona. Now, why is that not higher? Because that's a world event. That's a huge event. Well, It is soccer. Number four on our list, Michael Jordan, his final shot with the Chicago Bulls, 1998 NBA Finals, Jazzer up three with less than a minute left. Jordan hits a layup with 18.9 seconds left. Then he goes down to the other end and steals the ball, pokes it loose from Karl Malone, comes down, down 1 point, drives hard inside the three-point line, pulls up just above the, you know, the free throw line, and crosses over. And Jazz defender Byron Russell kind of runs by, and as he does, Jordan just gives him a little nudge as he goes by. Was it a push-off? Was it not a push-off? I don't know. Jordan drained the shot, nailed it, left the hand up there for a few seconds. With 5 seconds left, Bulls win. Jordan gets his sixth title. Was it a push-off? Again, now here's omission bias. Did the ref see it? Probably. Did the ref look at it and say, I'm not calling that here? Yeah, I think so. I think so. Michael Jordan's final shot with the Chicago Bulls, one of the top five non-calls of all time. Number three on our list. Me and Big J talked about this a little bit earlier. The Colorado team back in 1990. You know, in 1990, the University of Colorado football team started the season 1-1-1. They had beaten Stanford on the road. They had tied Tennessee, and then they had lost to Illinois. But in like about week five, week six, they trailed Missouri 31-27. And starting quarterback Darian Hagan had been knocked out of the game. Backup Charles Johnson had come in, and he led a late drive down into Missouri territory. He had thrown a quick pass, and the Buffs had the ball first and goal with 40 seconds at about the Missouri 5 or 6 yard line. They run up to the line. They spike the ball. There's first down. Second down, he hands off to Eric Bieniemy, who gets forward to the one. They take a timeout. But during the timeout on second down, the officiating crew and the sideline crew, they don't flip the yard marker. They don't flip it to be now third down. They still have it as second down. On third down, and when they went to the sideline, by the way, Johnson asked McCartney what they're going to run, and he called a three-play set. We're going to run a play. We're going to spike it. We're going to run a play. Center Jay Lewenberg looks at it and says, Coach, we don't have three plays. It's already you know, third down. He said, no. We have three. Look, it's only second down because they didn't flip the marker. On third down, Bieniemy gets stuffed. On fourth down, they spike it. And on fifth down, Johnson sneaks in, barely, if at all, and the Buffs win 33-31. Colorado went on to the national championship. Did the refs miss it? I think that the refs just missed it. That wasn't an omission thing. That was one of those things, bad communication, whatever. You know, the funny part about that game, I remember watching that game. I remember saying, it is fifth down. The funny part about that game, Missouri ran out onto the field, and they had to kick them off and get them all off the field after the game. Missouri thought they had won the game. They didn't think Johnson had gotten in. They had to kick everybody off, clear the field, and then they made Colorado run the extra point, because if you were to turn it over and Missouri return it all the way back, it was only a two-point lead. You could have scored 2 points, possibly tied it up. CU actually had to come back out of their locker room, take a snap, kneel on it, and end the game. You know, another one of those missed calls. They missed it. Fifth down, Colorado goes on to win a national championship. Number two on our list. We actually talked about this play a few weeks ago. The play. Stanford versus Cal, 1982. John Elway leads a late drive to give Stanford the lead 20-19 with 4 seconds left. Stanford kicks off and Cal laterals 5 times. But Dwight Garner was down when he lateraled. His knee was down. We can see he was down. Again, sometimes the officials, it's not anything dirty. It's not anything where they're going out saying, we're going to try to, you know, have a play here. Sometimes the officials get caught up in the emotion of the game too. Sometimes the officials are like, wow, that's an insane play. I can't believe I'm seeing this happening. Sometimes they get caught up. The play, Stanford versus Cal, they missed that one because he was down when he lateraled one of those balls. Number one on our list, the Daily Dose top five non-calls of all time has to be the 1972 AFC divisional playoff game between the Raiders and the Steelers. Yes, it's the immaculate reception. Raiders quarterback Ken Stabler scores on a 30-yard run with just over a minute left in the game to give the Raiders a 7-6 lead. The Steelers were actually facing a 4th-and-10 on their own 40. 22 seconds left. Terry Bradshaw throws over the middle to running back John Frenchy Fuqua. And Raiders safety Jack Tatum absolutely blows Fuqua up. Here's the problem. The ball deflects up in the air on the hit. It lands with Franco Harris. Franco Harris takes off and runs at 60 yards down the sideline and into the end zone. The only problem is that the ball couldn't touch an offensive player and then go to Harris. That was an illegal catch. It would have been an illegal touch by Harris to catch that ball after it had been touched by Frenchie Fuqua. You look at those replays, it pretty clearly was touched. What's weird about the play, and what's a little bit odd, and why it makes our list, and why it makes our list at number one, if you watch the play, the refs don't even signal, they don't all signal touchdown. Like one sort, I don't know, kind of starts to put it, they're not sure. In fact, the officials run down into like the dugout area and they try to call Art McNally for what to do. Art McNally was like the, you know, the head of officials. They try to call him for what to do. They say that the call went to Art Rooney, owner of the Steelers, who said, hey, it was legal. Go ahead and play it. Was it legal? I don't know, but the refs let it go and didn't call it. Touchdown, Steelers. Steelers moved on. Raiders went home. Number one on our list of top five non-calls of all time, the Immaculate Reception. Raider fans are still seething over that one. Hey, have to say thank you to Big J for joining us today on The Daily Dose. I hope that you all enjoyed getting to hear that a little bit. I appreciate him joining us so much. Join us anytime, Jason. We would love to have you back. Next week, we're going to have some Major League Baseball awards. Got to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball. Put a big bow on the end of that season. Of course, we will get to some NFL. Got to get to some college football. Some big, big games coming up in the world of football over the next few weeks. I appreciate you all joining the podcast so much. If you get a chance, head over to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us that review. It helps us so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this show each and every week without you. Appreciate all that you do. And also, have to say a quick get well soon to Mike out in SoCal. Underwent some surgery, some needed things, but he is on the mend and getting better. Mike, continue to get better. I will see you all next week.